Joining us on the line right now, representing the 14th Legislative District, Senator Curtis King, ranking member on Transportation and Labor, Commerce, and Tribal Affairs. Good afternoon, Senator. Thank you for your time.
Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So, Senator, give us your thoughts on the beginning of this year's session. Any surprises for you thus far? Any disappointments thus far?
Well, it's pretty much looking like it's going to be a session similar to what we had last year. A few members on the floor in person, and the rest of us by virtual. And so far, I think it's kind of going as we had expected. There's been some interesting things done, but for the most part, we're just getting cranked up and starting to get bills out of the committees that they were sent to. So we really haven't got into the real nitty gritty stuff that will be coming. Although yesterday, my understanding is that the House of Representatives passed a bill that would extend the long-term care program, would move it out, I should say, I think for either 16 or 18 months. My understanding was it moved it out till the sometime in June or maybe July 1st of 2023. They did provide some changes so that those that lived in the state, worked in the state, but lived outside the state, would no longer be required to pay. They did some things to help our military. I haven't seen what that is yet, but I know that's been a concern. The one thing they did not do was make it portable, so that if you paid into this for 30 or 40 years, and then you decided to leave the state to go live next to your grandkids or your kids so they could help you as you aged, you would just walk away from this benefit because you can't take it with you. But it creates all kinds of challenges. I know businesses have already been taking money out of employees' paychecks to pay for this because, you know, that's what the law said and that's what they should have done. So now they got to go back if this law passes, which I'm sure it will. They got to go back and pay that money back. Is anybody going to reimburse them for that? The answer is no. And then what about all the people that scrambled around in the insurance industry trying to find long-term care, couldn't find anybody that could sell it to them? It is just logistically a nightmare, in my opinion. It was so poorly constructed and so poorly put together, it should have just been put down. And if they felt like it was such a good thing, they should have started over and got it done right the second time. But no, apparently we're going to move it out for 18 months. I don't know what's going to happen to those that already have a letter that says they are exempt. That they've opted out, you know, are those letters going to still be viable? There's just so many questions that this brings up, but this typical of this whole program. So,
Senator King, has there been any attempt to divert the money into a specific fund like the gas tax to make sure that money's there and it just doesn't go into the general fund? And has there been any attempt to raise the cap on the benefit?
There has been, when they passed a couple of these bills, a couple of these amendments, it would raise the amount of money that would have to be paid in. So right now it's 0.58. I don't know what the military would do, but the fact that you had workers working in the state but living outside of the state, that would raise that 0.58 to probably somewhere around 0.6. So you'd be paying more in, but it does go into a dedicated fund. But The other aspect of it is that the businesses would only pay in at the end of the quarter. So the fact that we're passing a bill and we're saying we're moving it out for 18 months, but you've collected this money, there would be no money already sent to the state. It would just be up to the business to refund the money to the employee that they had taken out for this program.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th Legislative District here on the Bottom Line.
And let's talk a little bit more about the CARES Act, if we could. Senator Grignaft with you, by the way. Let's talk just a little bit about, you know, yes, we'd all like to see it repealed and maybe replaced. So what does a replacement program look like? What is that? How does that work?
Well, personally, I just think it, I would just see it go away. You know, this program, the way it was set up, you'd pay into it, and if you met the criteria, and I think it's somewhere around having worked so many years in the state, and so many years, I think it was 10 years, and you'd be vested, and then you would be eligible for $36,500 of long-term care, which could be having someone come to your home and take care of you. It could be used for building a ramp if you were in a wheelchair, as an example. It could do a variety of those kinds of things. But $36,500 is not going to last you very long. If you're in a long-term care facility, it's probably 4 months, if it's that. And then what are you going to do? You know, the other aspect of it is they kept saying, well, the private long-term care plans, you have a waiting period of like 45 days before it would kick in. So this one, they said, doesn't have a waiting period, except that L&I has 45 days to approve your plan once you apply. Personally, I think it was an overreach by government. And it should be left up to the individual to take care of themselves. And if you really wanted to take care of those people that need this care, that can't afford it, mostly in their older years, then raise the Medicaid rate. You know, put more money into the Medicaid rate, so that those individuals can afford to go into a long-term care facility. That's how you handle it. But they don't want to do that because that might solve the problem. So anyway.
Well, if I could just shift gears a little bit to a different topic that's surrounding the legislature. I mean, criminal justice reform / police reform / a very controversial bill that was introduced by, I guess, two lawmakers. I don't know if they were in the House or the Senate. That escapes me. About drive-by shootings. Now, where have you heard about where this is at? Do you know where this is? We have not heard a lot about this proposal since it was introduced and pre-filed. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. It would, I guess, disallow aggravated first-degree murder for someone convicted of a drive-by shooting.
Right. And I believe it's also retroactive.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like, well, and it's not just, I don't believe it's just a drive-by shooting. It's a drive-by shooting that actually kills somebody.
Right.
And they want reduced sentences for them. And it's like, so you drive by a house and you fill the house full of bullet holes and there happens to be a child sleeping in a bed and one of those bullets hits that child and kills them. And you want to give them a lesser sentence because it's a drive-by shooting.
Which,
tell me...
Yeah, there's no logic to that.
Right. Yeah, where's the logic there? It makes absolutely no sense to me. And they say, well, it's because it's usually minorities that are doing this, and it's usually minorities. All the more reason to try and stop it, not make it less of a crime than it truly is. I mean, it's unbelievable that we even think that way. But here we are. And, you know, it's true of a lot of these other safety and police reforms that we passed last year. This just happens to be, you know, one of the most egregious ones. We have tried to reduce the authority of our police We don't want to get people arrested. We don't want to hold them accountable. We passed a bill that had to do with if you're caught, if you're stopped and you have fentanyl or any of the other 10 or 12 drugs that are deadly, you can't arrest the person if it's a personal size amount, whatever that amount is. But if you have it, you can't arrest them. You can confiscate the drug. And then what they say is, well, when you have them there, you say, well, we're going to offer you the opportunity to go to this treatment center. Would you like to do that? Well, I mean, we're going to get a couple of gang signs and a few other things as they walk away from us, you know. And then, you know, supposedly you do that twice to the same person and nobody's keeping track of who stops who. Then you can arrest them as a misdemeanor, which would at least get them in front of a judge. But this is what we're doing. I mean, I went to a drug court. The people that were in that drug court trying to get their lives turned around, working very diligently to do that, they said the reason that they realized where they were at in their lives was when they got arrested. And they realized that there was not much further down that they could go, and they realized it was up to them to turn their lives around. That's what happens when you get arrested. It isn't that you just, I mean, they think they're helping these people that are hooked on these drugs, but all you're doing is letting them go back out, find some more drugs. And the one thing they never talk about is how do they pay for these drugs? Where do they get the money to pay for these drugs? Because no drug salesperson out there, anybody selling drugs, is going to give it away. You know, they're there for a reason, and it's to make money. So these people are either committing crimes or selling their body or doing all kinds of nefarious things so that they can get enough money to buy the drugs. And now we're saying, well, just because you have them on you, you can't be arrested. I mean, it's the opposite direction of the way we should be going, in my opinion.
We're talking with Senator Curtis King from the 14th Legislative District here on The Bottom Line. Senator King, not long after some of these really bad public safety bills were passed last year in session, part of your district, Yakima, saw one of the first examples of how these laws work against the police when there was a shooting outside of a store and they were never able to find the person who committed the crime. What have you heard from constituents regarding their feelings towards public safety since these bills have passed? And do you know for sure if there has been an uptick in crime in your district?
Well, I can tell you there has been an uptick in crime. There's been an uptick in serious crime all around the state. I mean, you look at the number of people killed. My understanding is that number has gone up drastically. The number of major crimes has gone up. The people that want to commit these types of acts, they know that the chance of getting caught is much less than it was a year ago. It's to the point where I was at Bi-Mart in Yakima a couple of months ago, and they told me that a gentleman walked in the front door, which they only have a front door. They have two ways. You walk in one door, you're checked, you walk out the other door. He walked to the back of the building, found the most expensive chainsaw they had, and walked out the other door. And as employees, they've been told, don't do anything. And this is what we're allowing to happen time and time again all across this state. How can a business even stay in business if this is what we're going to do to these criminals? So.
Senator Curtis King from the 14th Legislative District, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, sir. Appreciate you joining us. Look forward to talking to you again a little bit later on during the session.
You better believe it. I appreciate the opportunity and wish you both well. Thank you.